From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
Well, on September 9th, fans at the BYU University of Utah football game saw a purple Y lit up on the hillside above BYU Stadium. The group responsible for this was the Climate Campaign, a student-driven effort to depoliticize the topic of climate change. The color purple represents unity between blue and red, BYU and Utah, Republicans and Democrats. Here to talk with us about this are the co-founders of the group, Nick Huey, a student at BYU, and Colin Green, a student at the University of Utah.
Then in the second half of the show, the Department of the Interior recently tried to delay the implementation of a rule that would make oil and gas companies reduce the amount of methane gas emissions coming from their wells and pipelines located on federal land.
We'll speak with Dr. Tom Singer, Senior Policy Advisor with the Western Environmental Law Center, about this proposed rule, why this administration doesn't like it, why controlling methane emissions is important to our environment, our health, and our economy, and finally, what a federal district judge thought about the DOI's decision.
All that and some news and information about our ever-warming climate, how September was the fourth warmest September on record, global ocean temperatures were also the fourth warmest on record, Arctic sea ice was the seventh lowest on record, and Antarctic sea ice, you know that continent that's supposed to be getting colder, right? Mm-hmm. Antarctic sea ice was the second lowest ever recorded.
We don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our Facebook page at KPCW This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment, that's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
I'm Jim Weber, Park City resident and owner of Foothill Oriental Rugs, supporting KPCW for 25 years. For over 30 years, I've spent a month a year on the Indian subcontinent, where I personally select handmade carpets and textiles, which we import directly into my Salt Lake City store. We are located 2 minutes north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive. FoothillOrientalRugs.com.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and companies support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us in the studio for the first half of the show today is Colin Green, a student at the University of Utah, and Nick Huey, a student at BYU. And they are here representing the Climate Campaign, a student-driven effort to depoliticize the topic of climate change. That is a big goal. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So the purple Y lit up on the hillside of the BYU University of Utah football game has gotten a lot of press. But let's back up from that and talk a little bit about how this group got started and where the idea came from.
Cool. Well, Colin's from the U. I'm Nick. I'm from BYU. And I'm an advertising major, and I really wanted to advertise for something I believed in. And where I felt like we needed advertising, and that's climate change, because I feel like we need to persuade a lot of people that it's something that we need to work together on. So we were looking for a way to show that Democrats and Republicans, it's not a party issue. Democrats and Republicans can team up on climate change without too much drama. So I approached Colin because he was kind of a stud over at the U, who everybody said was great at organizing different activities and stuff. And I said, listen, I want BYU and the U to team up on climate and show Democrats and Republicans that, hey, if we can do this, right, we hate each other as much as you do. If we if we can do this, then so can you guys.
And so we worked together throughout the summer to organize a couple events, and we went public on the U's third day of school, where a bunch of BYU students came and invaded the University of Utah campus with purple flowers and an invitation to collaborate on climate change. And then we got a great response from that, and a bunch of press.
The purple has been people's biggest questions. Why purple? Like, right? We dropped off purple flowers, The reason is because BYU and the U's colors combined is purple, right? Same with Democrats and Republicans. Right. So it's kind of perfect that way. So we dropped off these purple flowers with a link to, and you can see the video we left them, theclimatecampaign.com. Really fun little Lego stop motion video just challenging them, hey, let's team up on this. We can team up on our planet.
Yep. And so we got a huge response from students at the U, and
I was just going to ask, what was the response to these flowers? Yeah, it was positive.
People are you even allowed on campus? This. I thought you weren't even allowed.
Is there a ban against them?
Yeah, we snuck on.
Okay.
They started wearing their gear, but we asked them to put some purple shirts on to make sure that,
that we didn't get beat up.
A little more neutral.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, so then got a bunch of probably between 30 and 50 students reached out via that first initial action, and then it was our turn, the University of Utah students, to respond and go down to BYU. And so on their first day of school, ahead of the big game, we went down and decorated the Brigham Young statue on their campus, adorned it with some flowers and a sign that says, "This is the place to unite on climate change."
That's great.
Wow. Yeah. I got to tell you right off the bat, that's a big deal. You're taking a big chance, aren't you? I mean, did you get people come up to you like, what are you doing to our statue? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this about climate change? Mm-hmm. I would think there's going to be some pushback.
You would think, and that's what I would have thought as well, but Nick had a pretty good feeling on the pulse down at BYU, and most of the response from BYU has been really positive, and it was early in the morning that we did it, so it was before most people were on campus. But the only signal that I got from anyone was someone like pumping their fist in the air, like, "Oh yeah, this is really cool."
Okay,
and so that's
we're not all heathens, right? We're
right.
Pretty cool.
But this is an issue that can be polarized.
Yes, absolutely.
I am, and we will talk a little more about that, the polarizing nature of this. Mm-hmm. We know that in our adult world. Quote-unquote adult world, it's a very polarizing issue.
Yeah.
All right, so those are some of the first actions or activities that you took. Then what happened at the game?
Yeah, so then on September 9th, so after they had kind of said, okay, we're in at the Brigham Young statue, we took a group of 50 or so students from BYU and the U, and we hiked up the side of the mountain just directly east of the stadium. So not where the Y is, but directly east where you can actually see it better. And we had 100 purple flashlights. They were actually just really, really powerful flashlights with a purple party bag over the top of it. Mm-hmm. And we
keeping it simple.
Keeping it simple, right? Low tech, right? Student budget. But we went up and we turned on these flashlights in the shape of a giant Y. And it was really fun because as soon as we did that, in 15 seconds, I had more text messages than I'd gotten for the last 6 months. It was crazy. Everybody was texting me asking what was going on, or news stations were texting, and everybody was just wondering what this big purple Y was about. It started trending on social media. Everyone was putting the hashtag purple Y or second Y, wondering what was going on.
So it was unannounced. You did this at some point during the game?
So we did it during the halftime of the game, right? Yeah.
So there wasn't anything else going on the field. No one else really knew.
So
it wasn't pre-broadcast that this is going to happen, and a special event and happening. You just did this.
We just
wanted to see if it. Okay.
Yep.
We had alluded to it in at the Brigham Young statue event on some news coverage we got there, but nothing overly public.
Right. Except afterwards.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was viral.
Right.
Yep.
In one form or another.
Yep.
Okay. So what are you doing now, education and awareness wise? What's the next step?
So at least the next step for BYU is getting us to a more climate friendly place. We've started building some really good, efficient buildings on campus. But we want to ask our campus to establish a goal like other universities have to reach carbon neutrality. So we're doing different creative executions, like a giant purple puzzle of Utah, where students are putting their handprints on the puzzle saying, this is a message we support. So we did that for about 2 hours on last Wednesday and got over 120 signatures. So more than a handprint a minute of just students that are like, yeah, I care about this.
Good. Right?
And I wanted to ask, we talked about this a little bit before the show, you know, we imagine that Colin working with students on the U's campus has a little bit of an easier time than you do working with students on the mm-hmm. BYU campus. Is that accurate? Like, what's your experience been?
So my experience has been really, really positive. As far as the students on campus and a lot of the faculty, they've been incredibly supportive. We're now starting a faculty branch of the climate campaign.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of faculty have been reaching out and saying, we want in, and supporting us in various amazing ways. And so we're now just in trying to see how to communicate that to others, because they really get the message. They understand that this is important and something in the Mormon faith, which we're a Mormon school, we're very family centric. And we realize that this is something that's going to affect our future posterity, right? Our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for that reason and a few others as well, we really care about climate change and we want to see it fixed. So really, we've had a few naysayers, but really I can probably count them on one hand as far as people that have said, this isn't real. The right. Earth is actually cooling, right?
Right.
We've had a few of those.
Sure.
But overall, I mean, the response has been pretty amazing. Yeah.
What about you, Colin?
My challenge at the U is there are so many different environmental groups, student groups, that it's like, oh, man, do we really want to get involved with another club?
Or I wish we had that problem.
And
good
so,
problem to have, right?
Yeah, trying to bring those different student right. groups together and get them all to unite under one message and one banner has been a big challenge. But a lot of different student groups have signed on and they have been helping in various ways.
By the way, we're speaking with Nick Huey and Colin Green, students. Nick, a senior at BYU, Colin, a senior at the University of Utah. We're talking about their efforts to put together a group called Climate Campaign, a purple campaign combining the red and blue of BYU and University of Utah. And you were talking about the fact that you have so many disparate groups, environmental causes one another. They act in silos, much like environmental nonprofits
yeah.
do up here.
Yeah.
We have lots of environmental nonprofits who work on different areas, air quality, water quality, ecosystems, energy systems, waste, and there needs to be, they all have similar missions, you know, and in general, they environmental stewardship and stuff. So you're saying that's part of your challenge,
right.
Is you get environmental, maybe it's environmental group fatigue or something, or campaign fatigue
yeah, you're right.
after a while. It's like, well, I'm already spending my precious hours, my precious free time mm-hmm. on this group. Do I really want to get involved with you guys? So when they sign, you say they sign on, what are they signing up for, some call to action or some other activities and initiatives?
So they can, we ask people to go to our website and they can fill out a little form saying, hey, I'm into this, I want to get involved. And if you sign up at BYU, then Nick gets an email. If you sign up at University of Utah, then I get an email. We also brought Utah State University onto the mm-hmm. campaign, and so they have a chapter up there. And we're looking to expand to all the other universities and trying to do different actions and events at all the different universities in sync, so that way we're making our voices louder to show the politicians that they can take action on climate change regardless of their party affiliation.
Now, I know it's early in the game, but have you been able to attract any conversation or attention from some of our politicians, whether that's a local level or a state level, or where does that stand?
Yeah. So we've got, John Curtis, we made this giant gesture of thanks to Mayor Curtis in Provo for all that he's done to help clean up the air. He's established Provo's Clean Air Toolkit, encouraged some mass transit, and really under the umbrella of cleaning up our air, he's inadvertently done a lot of things for our climate, and we wanted to thank him for that. So we built a giant 6-foot by 6-foot cardboard container in the shape of a giant Y. Right. So it's this giant purple Y that we filled with thank you letters from faculty and students at BYU and covered in handprints, blue handprints of BYU students saying thank you so much for doing this. So we've offered to give it to him, and he's going to come to the wall, a restaurant on BYU campus. And mm-hmm. we're presenting this gift to him saying thank you so much for all you've done to clean up our air. Mm-hmm. Now, as you move on to Congress, please keep doing that. More of the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's impressive.
Right.
We've also chatted a little bit with some state representatives that are looking to run climate change bills this coming session, but I'm not sure where we stand on communicating about those things at this point. But
okay. There
should be some climate change bills this coming state legislative session.
Yeah.
And that was something, that was an effort actually this past legislative session just to get the conversation going, right? And you were involved in that, I think, a little bit, Colin.
Yep. And so something similar should be happening again this year, and we're trying to show that politicians can vote for climate change legislation without losing their seats. And Mia Love has been a great representative of that and champion of that cause from the Republican Party. And so
right.
We're trying to show the other Utah politicians that they can also follow her lead.
Yeah, well, because there's environmental reasons, of course, mm-hmm. but there's also economic reasons why we need to
right.
address climate issues. And there's a moral obligation, too, associated, like you were saying,
yeah,
Nick. So you can tailor the message to different groups, depending on who you're talking to. And, of course, with the mayor of Provo, John Curtis, who's running for Congress, there's a political, you know, there are votes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep,
and
totally.
BYU
Absolutely.
Students vote. And
yep.
and so there's a reason, there's a motivating factor to it. There's a political
Absolutely.
Calculus to this.
Yes.
So we'll pay attention to you.
So in thinking about kind of the future of this group, are you guys, planning to become a nonprofit? Is this a one-time thing? Do you see a long history or a long future for this?
We are working to get our 501c3 status. We're currently a 501c4, which is a lobby organization, but we're trying to transition away from that and move towards the C3. And then we think it's a really, really scalable idea. And so by using rivalry as a tool for bipartisanship, we think we can reach out to other sports teams and sports groups that can push this message further into the national stage. Green Sports Alliance is one organization that have been working with. And
what is the Green Sports,
Green Sports
Alliance?
Green Sports Alliance is an organization of just under 400 sports teams and organizations and stadiums that look to make sporting events more sustainable. And so they have an incredible network from universities to professional teams to minor league. It's all across the nation. And so they really like the idea of using this as a tool to bring up the conversation.
How about other local universities, Utah State, Weber State, Westminster? Have they gotten contact with you? Want to join? Add their colors, which then kind of muddies the whole purple
yeah.
thing. But
brown.
We won't keep on.
Color
yeah. Brown is the color of the movement. No.
Right. But are they reaching or
yeah.
are you in contact?
Yeah. So like Colin alluded to before, Utah State has actually hopped on board with the BYU Utah State game, and they reached out to us, and they were just amazing, doing a whole bunch of different chalk events on their campus. And then Weber State has reached out as well, and we're planning to bring them on. UVU, we're talking with them about coming on. SUU, Westminster.
Okay. Other schools around the country, other colleges and universities take notice of this?
So they haven't taken notice as far as other universities around the country. We are talking with another group right now about moving to Florida, just because they're so affected by climate change, and they're
yeah.
also a pretty purple state as far as
yes.
Democrats and Republicans go. So we are thinking about moving to other states right now and looking where to do that, but no other universities have specifically
okay.
reached out and said, come to our state.
Right.
Yeah.
So another key piece of course, being an active nonprofit and making all these things happen is funding. Do you guys fundraise? Do you have a funding source?
Yeah. Funding has been our biggest challenge so far.
As always, yeah.
Yep.
And that doesn't surprise me.
So we've had a lot of individual sponsors that believe in the idea and the concept to pony up and give us some cash.
You're college kids. What do you need money for? You do everything,
that's
like
right.
you said, flashlight and a paper bag. You know, that's a purple
a cardboard
bag.
Cardboard,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we're trying to figure out the next steps
right.
on funding.
Yeah, so what we've been funding it normally through our website, theclimatecampaign.com, and there's just a donate button at the bottom, and people have been very, very generous and helpful. We're trying to get that 501c3 status so that we can start asking for donations from bigger businesses, but right now we're totally funded on individual do-gooders. It's been really nice.
Awesome. So we know that the students are on board and behind this initiative. We know faculty have been reaching out and are interested in getting involved. What about the universities themselves? Have they taken a stance on this? Is it something you've asked for, a commitment, you know, at the university level?
It's a slow process, and I've been working with the sustainability office, and I have not reached out directly to President Pershing, but that is something I would like to do and ask for the university's endorsement. They have retweeted us and done things on Twitter and Instagram and other social media platforms. So indirectly, they've supported us at the U, but not...
They haven't memorialized anything.
No, not quite.
Yeah, you need a little more. You got to get to some more critical mass.
Get inroads
before you get. Right. How about at the BYU? Yeah,
same story. So the local paper and the school communications have all done stories on us in the Purple Y. So they recognize us. They know we're there. There hasn't been any institutional level interaction yet. You know, we are actually both working on something that we think will be a fun way to communicate with Pershing and Worthen. But that's in the works, and we'll let you know about it when it happens.
Yeah, it's young still, so stay tuned to hear about that in a few months.
My last question regards the two of you and your futures. You're both seniors, unless you're going on the grad school or so. Do you plan to make environmental awareness or environmental missions part of your career choices?
Absolutely. I'm studying environmental and sustainability science and peace and conflict, and so I want to work where those two fields come together. I think we're going to have a lot of places for collaboration over natural resources as they become more stressed. Also places for conflict. And so that's where I think I'd like to see my career going.
Okay. Nick, you're in advertising.
Yep.
Is there an environmental path in advertising or environmental lens associated with advertising?
Yeah, there are a few organizations that I would totally work with if they said come on as an advertiser. But really, I'd like to see the climate campaign take off and be able to make this my full-time job. I feel like advertising could be the answer to getting more people on board with climate change and action to do with it. So, yeah.
Well, advertising deals with messages.
To the masses, right? And it's a problem of the masses. So, yeah.
Got it. So you take what you learn in school in those programs and apply it to the climate campaign or so.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. We got to wrap up. Nick Huey and Colin Green, thanks again for joining us this morning, members of climate campaign. Again, the website is?
Theclimatecampaign.com.
Pretty climate campaign. Yeah.
Thank you.
TheClimateCampaign.com.
Campaign.com. All right. Go there to learn more about what they're doing and what the students en masse at both the BYU and University of Utah are doing with respect to climate change awareness and education. Thanks again, you guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming in.
All right. Let's take a quick break for some underwriters and sponsors. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with... Dr. Tom Singer. He is a senior policy advisor at Western Law Center. We're talking about the BLM DOI's methane emissions rule and what in the world is up with that, what this administration wants to do with that rule and is trying to do. We'll give you the details on that. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back after these messages.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital and New Park Town Center, with new retail spaces and a year-round community development. Information about New Park Town Center is available at 801-303-5440.
Hi, this is Brenda with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage collection and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Thank you for helping to keep Summit County clean and green. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And, you know, like we said in the intro, the Department of the Interior recently tried to delay the implementation of a rule that would make oil and gas companies reduce the amount of methane gas emissions coming from their wells and pipelines located on federal lands. Just federal lands, not across the country or every, you know, just federal, just gas and oil wells located, or infrastructure located on federal lands. Well, this administration is trying to block or otherwise delay the implementation of this rule. And joining us to talk about why this is occurring and what this rule is about is Dr. Tom Singer. He's a senior policy advisor with the Western Environmental Law Center. And Dr. Singer, thanks for joining Nell and myself this morning on This Green Earth.
Good morning.
Hey, let's start here. Just give us some background on the methane emission rule and what some of the details are of it, and who put this together to begin with?
Well, many environmental groups, including Welk, of course, were looking at the when the Obama administration was looking at how much greenhouse gas was being emitted around the West, the states, including the state of Utah, did inventories of where greenhouse gases were coming from. And states like Utah and New Mexico, with lots of small sources from the oil and gas industry, wells, storage tank batteries, gas processing plants, those sources were not permitted. And so the states didn't have a handle on how much methane was being emitted from those sources. And as we, as the states and scientists and others dug into that, people started realizing that there was a tremendous amount of greenhouse gas pollution coming from the oil and gas industry that wasn't really monitored or measured. And so methane and the oil and gas industry became a source of concern for dealing with climate change.
So a rule, the Obama administration late last year then crafted a rule that would require these oil and natural gas industries to do a better job at basically monitoring and controlling the release of methane from their infrastructure?
Exactly. And the state greenhouse gas inventory started around 2010. Advocacy for federal action started around, I'd say, 2012. The BLM, which is part of an area that manages federal lands and oil and gas activity on federal lands, started their rulemaking in 2014. That went through a process we may talk about in a bit. And then the rule was actually adopted finally, which meant it became law, in November of 2016. So it's not like it just popped out of the oven. It was baked for a very long time.
Okay, so it but then in November 2016 it becomes law. But was it a challenged?
Yes, this rule the cat with hopefully nine lives, and the first challenge was that industry, on the day that it became effective, sued to have it overturned and halted immediately. That was in a federal court in Wyoming, and the judge there denied industry. And there are a few conservative states that were involved in that lawsuit, that challenge as well. And the judge said, you know, this isn't a slam dunk for industry. This rule might be appropriate, be legal. And so we're not gonna stop it today. Let's go have court hearings and have a process, a judicial procedure.
And so, tell us about that. Where does it stand now?
Wow. Well, that particular lawsuit is ongoing, and there's going to be a hearing about it in Wyoming on November 6th. And again, the parties are. It got trickier because the parties are many, many national, regional, and local environmental groups that are sticking up for the rule, that are fighting for that rule very hard. On the other side is industry, again, a few states, and the BLM itself, who is kind of walking away from this rule because of the current administration. But there are many good arguments. Obviously, we think the best arguments for the legality of that rule. And we're confident that even in a challenging environment of Wyoming, we're confident that that rule is going to be upheld. There were other challenges to that rule, most notably and most extremely exciting. Early on in the new year, Congress was reversing and assailing all kinds of Obama administration rules. It was a very sad thing. One of the rules they went after, the process called the Congressional Review Act, if Congress overturns a rule or reverses a rule, that particular statute says that the rule can never be reissued in substantially the similar form. So that would have been the death knell for any administration in the future regulating methane on federal lands. Remarkably, the supporters of killing that rule lost, and the Congress, Mike Pence was called to the floor of the Senate to break a tie, that you could cut the tension with a knife. And three Republican senators who were champions of climate change action voted against that resolution, and the rule survived. And no matter what the Trump administration does in the future, the forms of that rule or that rule itself will come back into play, come back into effect.
I believe that's John McCain was one of those that voted against it, that rule.
Very dramatic.
In a very dramatic video showing him one or two thumbs down. To
correct.
Almost like audible shocks to the audience that he voted against that rule. Apparently, some people say after speaking with some families or so who lived in the Four Corners region, talking about methane and the environmental health impacts associated with methane and other organics that are emitted by natural gas and oil wells. So the efforts to obliterate this rule failed there, but it's still going to court. So it hasn't been implemented.
Well, there's aspects of the rule that were not gutted. So the rule itself, when it became final, when it came into effect, gave, in response to industry comments, Interior did listen to industry. They were given a year till February of 2018 to implement most of the provisions that would cost them small amounts of money to either plug leaks or add new equipment or get gas into pipelines. And they were given more time to plan for that and get ready for that. But a few of the provisions controlling venting of gas deliberately during well drilling and submitting plans for how they were going to prevent waste were in effect and are in effect. But most of the substantive provisions of the rule were delayed by the rule itself. And now the administration is seeking to delay it another year.
Okay.
With a blatant knowledge, the blatant claim that they're going to revisit the rule any way they can to weaken it or kill it.
Okay.
Well, so now that we understand sort of where this stands legally, let's talk a little bit about the methane venting problem itself. This is an enormous, so we know that methane is a really, really powerful greenhouse gas, and enormous amounts of this are vented. So give us kind of a summary of the problem that we're looking to address here.
Yeah, now make sure we come back to the legal issue because there were other challenges. Shall I hit that now first?
Well, let's get Nell, address Nell's comment, then we'll come back to it. We got time.
Okay. Well, as Nell mentioned, methane, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, International Science Body, methane is 36 times worse more powerful than carbon dioxide as a climate pollutant over short, over a longer period of time, over 100 years, because it degrades in the atmosphere over a short period of time. So in the short run, it's 86 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. So it's an extremely dangerous pollutant for the climate, and one that's fairly easy to control. And when I say that, now the emissions of methane really come from leaks, which are caused by sort of old equipment and just failures in pipelines and equipment, small ones, so that you don't get explosions. But some of these can be very dramatic. And then there's also something called venting, where there's equipment or practices that just release methane directly into the atmosphere because the equipment is driven by pressurized methane. And then there's flaring, which burns methane, combusts methane, but there's still uncombusted methane and, of course, carbon dioxide and other pollutants when that gas is vented. And the problems are numerous, and I can go through them if you'd like, that creates.
Right. Well, just to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Dr. Tom Singer. He's a senior policy advisor with the Western Law Center. We're talking about the Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management's recent announcement under this administration to kind of repeal a methane emissions monitoring and control rule established by the Obama administration late last year. And we were just talking about the potential environmental impacts. But there's, let's remember, this is a commodity to many, well, at least in the natural gas industry. I can understand the oil industry can see methane as kind of a burden. That's why they flare it off at wells because they can't collect enough of it to tie it into a system. But for the natural gas industry, that's whose job it is to collect natural gas, methane, this is a commodity that's being released. So I would think that there's an economic reason why the natural gas industry would want to limit releases, right,
Tom? Well, that's correct. And part of the look at this rule was, well, if you get more gas in the pipeline, aren't you going to make money to offset the cost of stopping this pollution? And, of course, that's true. And so, it's a typical he said, she said. The industry is saying no, it's too expensive. But there have been engineering studies by engineering firms that the industry itself hires and works with that have said that most of these controls are extremely inexpensive. Some of them are actually profitable. And with more expensive pipeline systems and processing, the industry needs to do that anyway. If they're going to get this gas to market and not waste it, they've got to have pipeline networks and compression and processing plants. So it's there's no excuse. No excuses here.
Well, and in addition to that, I think I read on your website that by some accounts, the lost methane means that taxpayers have lost out on royalties of almost $400 million. And this is this amount of methane is equivalent the amount of methane gas wasted every year is equivalent to the climate pollution from 34 coal-fired power plants or 28 million cars, which is enough to power 12 million homes. I mean, these are like enormous numbers. It seems like an enormous wasted resource.
Well, I live in New Mexico, not Utah, but I've been to Utah many times, and I think state's residents are very familiar with the number of wells that are operating in Utah. There are over 12,000 that are operating. There's plenty of wells that are capped or abandoned, which also vent methane if they're not properly shut. And the industry is requesting thousands and thousands of more wells to drill. And your air quality regulators do have a few rules, or a few regulations requiring the industry to control methane. But generally speaking, they're not. And yes, Utah loses about $4 million in royalties that would have been charged if this methane were sold and counted by the federal government as you know, a public resource that's being developed by industry and then sold.
All right, we have just a few more minutes, Tom. So let's loop back to the legal story here, because it's not quite done. There's actually the announcement last week to further delay the implementation of this rule by the Department of Interior. A federal district judge, I believe out of Northern California, stepped in.
Correct.
and made an announcement. What did she do?
Well, after the CRA vote and President Trump came out and said, I want all my agencies to look at all of Obama's climate policies and reduce the burdens to industry, regulatory burden to industry, Secretary Zinke himself issued what's called the secretarial order, staying the rule for another year. And WELC representing groups and many other groups sued in the District of California and said, he can't do that. That's illegal. And, of course, the court agrees that the secretary unilaterally can't overturn a rule that went through an administrative process to be implemented. So next firing squad was a proposal by the Department of Interior to issue a new rule to implement the stay, and that's what's ongoing. So the administrative stay was overturned by this court, and now we're in a new rulemaking process. And the reason the administration is giving for a rule to delay the rule is so they can do another rule a year from now to rewrite the rule or just kill it.
I want to see that that sentence you just spoke in words.
Yeah, we can graph it. We can graph it.
A rule, but that's the kind of the rabbit hole we've gone down into with this, and with respect to other rules, environmental rules writ large, that are all being quote unquote reviewed, delayed, deferred, or otherwise dismantled, whether it's by the Department of Interior or, of course, Scott Pruitt's ex-Environmental Protection, Environmental Protection Agency. It's all happening under this administration, and it's keeping you guys very busy.
Indeed it is, and we'll be defending this rule, and there's a companion EPA rule that does similar things that Pruitt is going after as well. And we'll be fighting tooth and nail to preserve these rules, and I have no doubt that in the future there will be very strict climate controls, and controls on the oil and gas industry on public lands will be part of that.
Yeah. Well, a lot to follow here. We appreciate you taking the time to chat about this. It's Dr. Tom Singer, again, Senior Policy Advisor with the Western Environmental Law Center. And is there a website for the Western Environmental Law Center people can go to learn about more?
Yes, it's simply welc.org.
WELC.org.
Correct.
Perfect. Tom, thanks again for joining us this morning on This Green Earth. And I think we'll maybe get back in touch with you as this case unfolds going into next year.
I'm sure it will be dramatic. Love to talk to you about it.
All right.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks again. Let's take a break for a couple of underwriters. And we come back. We got some news events to address. Some articles?
Some
say yes.
Record-breaking
temperatures
et cetera,
as usual. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Get ready for some show-stopping performances and maybe just a bit of competition as four larger-than-life Broadway leading ladies pull out all stops and selections from blockbuster musicals, including Les Miserables, Dreamgirls, My Fair Lady, West Side Story, and Chicago. Broadway Divas, October 27th and 28th at Abravanel Hall. For tickets starting at $21, visit utahsymphony.org. Utah Symphony Utah Opera is a nonprofit organization and a supporter of KPCW.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And we are back to talk about all of the new records being set by the past month, or by the month
of
September.
Yeah, records. We love breaking records.
Yeah, exactly. It's we're number,
break rec- number,
number one.
One
in record breaking. As usual, these reports come out monthly and quarterly, looking at how, you know, the climate has changed and how current weather compares to past years.
Right.
And it sounds
I got some
this
news.
Month was no exception.
And all this comes from a very credible source, Weather Underground. And they're great. It's a great website. And so this is a little blog that was put up by, now I'm trying to remember his name, chief meteorologist there with the Weather Underground website. September 2017 was the planet's fourth warmest September since record keeping began in 1880. Now that actually comes from NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information and NASA. Okay, so two pretty credible sources too. The only warmer Septembers have come during, are you ready for this now? 2015, 2016, and 2014. Okay. The last
recent years.
The three past years.
Note.
Minor differences can occur, et cetera, et cetera. But global ocean temperatures last month were the fourth warmest on record for any September, also according to NOAA and NASA. So both, you know, the global and the oceans are warming, and that's why we had a main reason why we had 10 consecutive hurricanes form from 10 consecutive tropical systems.
And interestingly, global satellite measured temps for the lowest 8 kilometers of the atmosphere, so the part of the atmosphere closest to us here on the Earth, were the warmest for any September in the 39-year record, according to the University of Alabama, Huntsville. So again, there's a lot of heat.
There's a lot of heating going on, and a lot of heating being trapped in our atmosphere and in our oceans. All right. In addition, 2017 is the second highest January through September, that 9-month period, in the 138-year records. So we're in second place. And this is only behind the record year, which was 2016. Now, this is interesting. This near record warmth in 2017 is especially remarkable. Again, this is from the Weather Underground web's blog. It's especially remarkable given the lack of an El Nino event that's this year. Global temperatures tend to be warmer during El Nino of years when the ocean releases more heat to the atmosphere. So no El Nino, but we're still on track to perhaps be the second warmest year on record. 2017 is almost certain to be the planet's warmest year on record that lacks any influence from El Nino. Here's the other Earth's four warmest years now. Where are they?
Let's take a wild guess.
2014, 2015, 2016, and probably 2017. The four warmest years on record are the last 4 years. And remember, I think we said when Brian McInerney was on that 16 out of the 17 warmest years on record have all occurred since the year 2000.
Right.
So it's that the trend is obvious. Okay. A, we're warming and humans are playing a big role in that warming. All right. So that's warming of the atmosphere and oceans. How's it impacting our poles?
What about ice? How's the sea ice doing?
Arctic sea ice extent is the seventh lowest on record for September. Only seven? That's bad. The previous records, 2012, 2007, 2016, 2011, and 2015. So all within the last, say, 9 years. Those are the top lowest extent of sea ice years. How about Antarctica? Second lowest on record for September. Sea ice surrounding Antarctica had the second lowest extent on record in September 2017 and has been at record to near record lows since September 2016. So it's global. It's primarily focused on the northern hemisphere. And it's even more focused on the Arctic, where a lot of this warming is going on and showing up in atmosphere and oceans and now sea ice. Let's see. We got one more. major weather stations. This is really, really interesting. So far in 2017, 168 major weather stations have set records for the all-time highest temperature ever measured. Okay, so thousands of weather stations around the world, 168 of them have set records for all-time highest temperature. Now, in a normal, under normal conditions, you would have as many, let's say, record highs as record lows. It's kind of averages out, plus or minus, but there's relatively a one-to-one relationship. So you may ask, how many record lows have been set so far this year? 17. 17 record all-time lowest temperatures ever measured. So that's 168 record highs versus 17 record lows. Plus or minus, that's a 10-to-1 ratio. That's astounding. That, to me, is real hard evidence. And that ratio has just been going on for year and decade over decade over decade. Okay, so all of that is from the Weather Underground's website. It's a great site to learn more about all things weather, climate
change. It is kind of amazing to look at these, you know, sites where all of the data is combined and gathered into one site, and it's Arctic sea ice and Antarctic sea ice and ocean temps and air temps and low atmosphere temps and highs and lows. It's all
CO2 concentrations.
It's all headed in the same direction.
Methane concentrations.
No surprise.
They're all trending up and up. All right.
This is why we need people like Nick and Colin who are changing the conversation on climate change.
Well, the next generation.
That's right.
And they play critical roles. And it's like they say, they see it as, yeah, most of the students they run into, they say, yeah, this is a problem. Why are we having arguments about this?
I loved Nick's offhand comment before the show. We said, are you encountering opposition at BYU? And he's like, no, it's overwhelming support. I mean, we're all millennials who get it.
Who get it?
It was kind of just like an offhand.
This is a conversation that we don't even need to have. The conversation is about what to do, not about whether this is happening or not, and and how much is being contributed by human factors and human influences. That's happening. We need to do something about it. All right, one last break, and we got to wrap up. Right?
That's right. Yeah. We do. It's this green earth.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Time to wrap things up on This Green Earth. Let's thank our underwriters and sponsors who are responsible for this show. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and most importantly, listeners like you.
Join us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth.
You can also email us your thoughts, your comments, and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Remember, this is KPCW 91.7 FM Park City. We've got your Wasatch back. NPR News is coming up. Thanks again for joining us.